get comfortable with like foam core and cardboard. That is something that I have so much of in my house. And anytime I get an idea and anytime my students have an idea, that's what we use primarily to create our breadboard mockups. Just building things that you're thinking could work or maybe could work out of those materials is the first step toward making something real.
Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Cindy Burnett.
And my name is Dr. Matthew Werwood.
This is the Fueling Creativity Podcast.
On this show, we'll be talking about creativity topics and how they apply to the field of education.
We'll be speaking with scholars, educators, and resident experts about their work, challenges they face, and digging deeper into new and varying perspectives of creativity.
All with the goal to help fuel a more rich and informed discussion that provides teachers and parents with knowledge they can use at home or in the classroom.
So let's begin. Today, we welcome toy designer Ajel Wade to the podcast. Ajel has been in the toy industry for over 10 years, working for companies like Toys R Us, Party City, and Madam Alexander, just to name a few. She's climbed up and across the ladder in the toy world, starting out as a designer, later gaining 3 toy patents, and eventually becoming a VP at a toy company. But after building and mentoring in a diverse and talented team toward success, she had the vision to do the same with newcomers to the toy industry. With that thought, Ajel combined her industry knowledge, inspirational mantras, and extra passionate toy talks to create the now top-rated toy podcast, Making It in the Toy Industry, which is close to 100 episodes. Today, Ajel is known industry-wide as the Toy Coach. She joyfully works as a consultant for popular IPs and toy companies of all sizes. Her online course, Toy Creators Academy, empowers newbies in the toy industry with step-by-step guidance, downloadable worksheets, and group coaching. I had the opportunity to meet Ajel at a presentation and immediately fell in love with her passion and dedication to making the world a more playful and toyetic place. So welcome, Ajel.
Thank you for having me, Cindy. Hi, Matt. How you doing?
Hello.
So Ajel, let's start with your story about how you got into the area of toy and toy design.
Yeah. Okay. So I always wanted to be a teacher. Actually, I remember telling my grandmother often that I just wanted to be a teacher for some reason. And my sister, who I was telling you guys a little bit about offline, actually convinced me real low key that I should not do that. And the reason she didn't want me to do that is because, you know, we came from, you know, our family had a lot of ups and downs financially. So money was always or sometimes or too often a problem. And she just thought a path of a teacher was just not going to get me anywhere financially. So she was like, no, I'm sorry, Ajel, you can't do that. So I grew up and, you know, then with this whole money thing in my mind, I actually went to the Fashion Institute of Technology because it was the cheapest college out there that I could go to. And there I studied exhibition design, right? And I focused on kids' exhibition design. And then one of my teachers told me, you know, there's this whole toy program here. I think you should apply for it. I didn't believe it was a real industry, real career. I was like, does this make money? Because my sister won't let me do it if it doesn't. And I applied, I got in, and that was just the beginning of my toy journey.
We're going to shift gears toward education, and our primary audience are teachers and parents. And I can't help but make a connection to myself, a young student, really young, 9, 10, and being challenged to create new fairground rides and new toys and the types of experiences that you're talking about. And I absolutely loved it. Perhaps it's because I was creating something that I would enjoy, but I'm really curious. It definitely is something that you see in the curriculum. Perhaps too often we see it at the early years curriculum and not enough at the older ages of the curriculum. So perhaps let's just focus on the older ages. Why should we be doing more of this kind of toy design in the curriculum?
Well, so when I first started out in toy design, I was terrible at it. I say this at a lot of places that I speak, but I was so bad. I remember talking to my friend saying, why did you let me get into this? This is not for me. And what I had to learn to do is I had to learn to not look at my direct competition and just try to do a better version of what they were doing. I had to learn to really analyze like society and what kids were doing that was different from years before and what parents wanted that was different from years before. And then I had to analyze the toy industry in a way that wouldn't have me copying what already exists, but innovating something completely new. That process of thinking and learning to combine different elements of your life into a brand new solution that doesn't exist is I think what made me who I am today, like someone who could be a patented inventor and someone who now my sister admits can come back around full circle and be a teacher and educate and pay the bills. And I just think that that ability to be able to analyze the different aspects of your life and then bring it back around into whether it's the toy industry or the cosmetics industry or teaching even is really powerful and something that a lot of people don't take time to develop.
So I have a follow-up to that because you're making me connect back to an activity that I had my students do in my design thinking class. You know, I have a background in design thinking and particularly trying to express the needs of the user. What do they want? And what I found really fascinating about that is that some would obviously go about trying to create the best design of a plane, how far it could go. The one thing that I recognized that my students did was that they weren't thinking about themselves. In that moment, they were constantly thinking about what were the needs of the people that they were designing for. And it seems really obvious because that's what we're always trying to preach and teach within design and design thinking. But that was the one activity that I believe I had really great success in doing that because I connected them to the needs of young children.
Yes. Yeah. And that's something that most people don't spend time doing. Even inventors that come to me now, I have to bring them back to what you're teaching your students. Like, who are you making this for? Why are you making this for them? Why do they need this? And stop thinking about yourself. That's a way that I feel like I want to frame it. Like, stop thinking about yourself. Think about who you're talking to. It's so smart.
We would love to hear about the process that you teach.
It's a huge process. So the Fashion Institute of Technology, amazing. So they have a program there. It's a toy design program run by this amazing woman, Judy Ellis. She started it back, I think, in the 80s. And a bunch of adjunct professors come in and teach. So these are mostly people that are working full-time in the industry. And then the full-time professors are the ones that have retired. And I learned so much. What you learn in that program specifically is how to visually design products that look toyetic. And toyetic is really just a term for marketable, scalable, a toy that can easily be expanded over the years. So you learn to design for the aesthetics of the toy industry today. And then you actually learn the process of being able to build those products. Like, we had wood shop class, we had 3D modeling classes. Like, we would come up with an idea, we would draw it, and then we would go through wood shop, we would go to SolidWorks, and we would build it, we would print out 3D models, and we would physically have to make working samples of our toy ideas by ourselves. The process that I teach now, having gone through that experience, is actually mostly the front end. Like, I focus a lot on that front end of developing that concept. And what I have my students do first and foremost is go out to the toy stores and understand the industry that you're innovating for, not because I want you to copy what's already there and not because I want that to lead what you're going to create, but you can't improve this industry if you don't already know what it's doing wrong and what it's doing right. So you've got to become a little mini expert on, let's say you're going to design a doll, on just like the doll aisle. Who's selling there? Is it Hasbro? Is it Spin? Is it Mattel? You know, who's selling there? What products are they making? What are the price points of those products? I have my students really, really focus on that for a bit. Once they do that, I actually tell them, okay, now everything you learned, like, put it away and don't look at it for a long time. Because now what we're going to do is we're going to focus on you. We're going to focus on the idea that you initially had when you came to me. And then we're going to focus on like what experiences you have in your life that are making you think that this idea is necessary. And I have my students do a lot of surveying. Like, they go out to their friends and their family and find out what they like about similar toys, like the one that they're creating, and what they don't like. They actually show them their product and get them to answer very specific questions about the price point of it and the size of it and the weight of it. It all depends on the product. So for me, that is a really important part of the process. once they vet their idea, once they figured it out, they've objectively vetted this idea, that's when all like the nitty gritty stuff that I think my students think they want when they first sign up, like that's all they want me to sell them. But I'm like, no, you don't need, you need other stuff. Then that's when you get into the, here's the factory contacts that you need to reach out to. You know, here's how you communicate with factories your idea. Here's how you set up a bill of materials, how you set up plan drawings to explain how it works, how you connect with freelancers to help you do that if you can't do it yourself. Then we get into how you sell your idea to like toy companies and retailers. Here are the templates of the things you need to do that. So, I mean, I kind of lure my students in with, yes, I'll give you what you want, but then I teach them what I know they need to succeed, which is that design thinking front end.
And I think, you know, just to really pull something out there is the importance of design research at the beginning. So I think for teachers listening to this podcast, when we're engaging in students in these really fun creating and making experiences, one of the things that design thinking really kind of pushes to the forefront is this idea of focusing on your end user. But you have to know about your end user. You have to understand the context of that end user. And it seems to me that that is the piece that you're really getting them to understand. But I also love the you piece as well, right? So it's almost pushing back on what I just said, is that once you know everything, once you understand the industry, you understand your user, then you can go and start thinking about, okay, how do you and your ideas relate with what you now know?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Couldn't said it better myself.
I want to ask a question about creative toys. I have two children, ages 12 and 13. And I know, especially when they were little, I would always be in search of sort of more creative toys, toys that sparked creativity. What do you think about this? Do you think there are uncreative toys? And do you just try to get people to invent toys that are creative or uncreative? And do you think there's a difference? I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
I love creative toys. Most of my career, I actually worked in the arts and crafts space of the toy industry. So that was all I did. I absolutely loved them because what I would love to do is I would love to create a product and a bill of materials and design on the front of the box, like this is a flower crown kit, but I would intentionally include excess materials because I wanted the kid to be able to go against what they saw in the box. I hated those kits that would only give you exactly what you need because I felt like it was so limiting to your creativity. And then as far as what I guide people to do, I try not to guide what my students create because they really come to me to make their ideas real, right? But I try to guide them when, let's say they want to sell an idea to Hasbro or to Mattel. I'll guide them in the sense of like, okay, they're not going to buy this idea like this. If you really want them to buy this idea, you're going to have to change it to make it more marketable. Like, what are the selling points that would be on a commercial? And I'll break that down for them. But if they come to me with an idea that they want to sell themselves, I just help them make sure they're doing the right market research and building a list of interested people so that they have someone to sell it to when the time comes and that they're putting it at the right price point. I personally love creative toys. I think that there needs to be more creativity built into toys that are not intended to be creative. Like what, like action figures can have more creative elements to them. And some of them do with like accessories. Dolls have elements to them, but that could be applied to like play sets. I've actually seen some really cool playset innovations that are coming that I can't share, but they are adding that creative element where the kid gets to influence the look and the feel of the whole playset by doing something. I think it should be included more. And there is a huge opportunity. Like if teachers can get their students to come up with those ideas, there are opportunities for them to pitch those ideas in the toy industry right now.
Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So I just did a podcast episode on this. There's this event called, it used to be called the Chicago Toy and Game Week. Now it's called the People of Play Week. And they have what's called the Young Inventor Challenge. So it's for kids from ages 6 to 18. And they essentially pitch toy or game ideas, and industry executives, including myself, are asked to review the concepts, give feedback. But the cool thing is that sometimes some of these concepts actually get picked up by toy companies. There have been winners in the past who have had their products end up on shelf of like kid winners. Crazy. So cool. So you teachers could be holding a whole event, getting your kids, and then they can come to Chicago Toy and Game Week. I think that'd be really cool.
That would be amazing. Do you have any resources on your website that teachers or parents could tap into to help them work with their students?
I would say get on the Toy Creators Academy email list, because when I launch the kid version, I will be alerting that email list because you are not the first person to ask. So I'm working on that solution now. But until then, I mean, the last episode I just did on my podcast is all about the event I just described to you. So I would say the toycoach.com/98, you'll learn about the event, but also have links to sign up. So you can actually, and you can actually sign up to see what it's about for free. And if you want to go deeper into the pitching, that's where you get into paid plans and stuff.
So, Ajel, I've got to follow up to this idea of kind of toys that promote creativity, digital technology, mobile apps, right? I interact with a lot of parents that have concerns about how much screen time their children get. But then there are some apps out there that, you know, do promote creative thinking skills, problem solving skills, right? So I was just wondering, you know, if you could talk a little bit about your perspective of how parents, and maybe I'm focusing specifically on parents now, but, you know, what is the role of the iPad device within the home? And particularly, what do we need to be aware of in terms of the impact that might have on play and the more traditional toys and the hands-on experience that the kids can get with some of the toys that you just shared when you were responding to Cindy's question?
I feel so uncomfortable answering questions like this because I'm not a parent yet. So I know parents are very particular, okay, on their parenting advice. So I don't want to say you should be using an iPad for your kids if I haven't done that with my own children. But one of the things that I've seen come or is starting to like bubble to the surface is really like virtual play. And I think that the iPad experience can start to be expanded into like a physical kind of space experience once we can get AR technology to the right level of quality. And it's happening, because what I've heard from a lot of people is that like there's this spatial reasoning that kids need to develop at a young age. And you can't do that on a screen. You have to do that by moving an object in physical space. So I think if I'm a future parent, I will try to limit screen time, and I would want my kids to be playing with craft toys and building toys. And like, that's what I think my primary focus would be. But at the same time, like maybe I'll need a break and I'll just be like, you take this iPad, you go do you, you know, I don't know.
But I think, so I am a parent. I'm a parent of three boys, and I can certainly respect the fact that you didn't want to. Yes, I'm that parent where I've sometimes got some looks. I'm like, really? I'm sorry. I need 30 seconds. So this iPad gives me the 30 seconds. But at the same time, you know, I have three boys that I would not consider addicted to their devices. And I did spend a lot of time making sure that they were exposed to, you know, opportunities to play other than the device. And I think that's really the main takeaway, is that trying to find that right balance. And I think that I found apps that I think can cultivate creative thinking, but that imaginative play, you know, the pencil and the paper, I would say as a parent, that's where I see my children being most creative, if I'm honest with you.
Okay. There is this one game I saw at Astra, which is a toy trade show. And it's an iPad, it's an app, but it's an app, it's called Pixicade. Basically, your kid is creating a game. And I was telling you guys I nerded out about HTML when I was a kid. So I used to love also making my own games. And the kids can actually draw a game in this app. And depending on the colors they use, what they draw will have different properties and characteristics. So like if they use, I'm not sure if I know the colors right by heart, but say black is a wall, red is like a danger object, and green is like your character or something like that. After they finish drawing it and they upload it, all the pieces essentially take on those characteristics based on color, and the kid can play that game. And then they can share that game. It's super cool. And when I played it, I felt like this feels like how I used to feel drawing and illustrating and building things. So I think there is some connection, but you can't get, like, I used to spend weekends building like boats out of paper also, and you can't, like life-size boats. And I mean, the kids need that. They still need that hands-on building in 3D space.
Ajel, I've actually had my son who's built games in a similar app where he's built a game that I then have to go through, and I'll sit there and, well, I don't swear in front of my kids. I was swearing inside my head because I couldn't, you know, I kept just dying. He's like, try again, try again, try again. But, you know, Matt, I also think that when you look at something like Minecraft, like we went on vacation and, you know, my son picked up his, you know, computer and I was thinking, really, you're picking up your computer? We just landed at our vacation house. And he said, I have to build this in Minecraft. I have to build this house. It's just so amazing. And then he built on extensions of what he wished it had and that it didn't have. And so I think there is a capacity in online gaming and in apps and computers to be able to be creative. And so I think it's all about that balance, right? You know, that we, yes, we need to be hands-on with toys. And at the same time, it's interesting, Ajel, we've talked to a few futurists in the last two seasons, Brian Alexander and Jonathan Adler. And they both talked about, you know, cobots and being able to collaborate with robots. So you think about that and then you think, well, we have to be able to, you know, work with those things. So I do think there is a balance there. And I think we can find ways to use our electronics to create things at the same time.
I work with a lot of inventors. So I've seen innovations that they are trying to do this, like bridge this world of on-screen and in-person. But what's happening is the companies that we're pitching it to, they don't have the infrastructure to take on these projects. Like they don't have that whole IT team dedicated to kids gaming. They don't even have the shelf space. Like where does this go in Target? Where does this go online? What kind of product is this? So I don't know what's going to happen to have a company really just say, okay, we're going to invest in virtual gaming or virtual gaming meets physical gaming, or I don't know. That's what I'm waiting to see.
So, Ajel, we have an upcoming episode where Cindy and I are going to share some ideas for gifts that parents can purchase for the holiday season. And we're thinking about, you know, building our list with things that cultivate some of the creative thinking skills and experiences that we've covered on the Fueling Creativity podcast. So in preparation for that show, I wondered if you could share with our listeners some gifts that they should consider buying in preparation for the holiday season, particularly when it comes to cultivating these creative thinking skills that we've touched on.
I mean, I do love Pixicade. I think it does a good job of that. Oh, I also, yeah, one of my, this is actually a listener of my podcast who built this company on his own, Marmals. They're these little like white marshmallowy looking figures that you can color on and like wipe off and erase. But he created these like magnetic limbs so you can like snap on their limbs and stuff. And it has this very like tactile fidgety play, but also combined with that creativity play and imagination play. So yeah, I would say Pixicade, Marmals. And what would be the third? But this is going to be sound very similar to Marmals, but I absolutely love the product Animoodles. So Animoodles are, imagine a stuffed animal, but all of their limbs can come right off. Like they're magnetic and you can just pull them apart. And there's a whole series of them. So there's like, you could have a cat Animoodle and a unicorn Animoodle, and then you could take them apart and you could create a cat unicorn Animoodle, like the head, the arms and the leg, you can like take it off and reposition it. So there's a lot of imaginative play. You can even change how it's standing, like hind legs or like front legs. So it's really cute. And their website is The Animoodles, not Animoodles, because I tried that. That didn't work. So, but it's a great toy. It's really cool. I have them here.
I've actually just bookmarked both of those toys. I think they're going to go on my list because they actually look like they're great stocking fillers as well.
And what's great, you're supporting other like parents. Some of them are parents and they're just independent entrepreneurs who saw a need and aren't just answering to the needs of like retail buyers. They're answering to the needs of the parents, which is, you know, great.
All right. To build on that, throughout December, parents will be home with their children, and I'm sure there are a lot of teachers out there looking for some sort of playful activity to give their students. Can you provide an activity that would allow parents or teachers to do a little play invention with their children?
I love to do toy challenges. My students love them, and I think that would be a really fun activity to do with your kids. So what is a toy challenge? The way I do them, I like to bring two different toys or categories of play, and then I like to tell my students, combine these two things and make something new. So for example, it might be Connect Four, and it might be like Animoodles, which I just described to you. How can you combine this two-player kind of competitive board game with these animals that snap apart. And what could be fun with kids, because with my students, they're adults, they think it through, they might sketch it out, they talk it through with me. But what might be fun for your kids is to actually buy the two things and physically try to build whatever it is they're imagining. And you can add things to it. Like you could say, I'm going to use like the chips from the checkerboard and I'm going to use a couple of the limbs from Animoodles, but I'm also going to take a piece of cardboard and build a new structure in which they're all going to come together and be a new toy or a new game. The reason this is a great exercise is because what you'll essentially build, if you build something that works the way your kid kind of imagines these two things combining, that is called a breadboard mock-up in the toy industry. And that could be your very first thing that you use to go into, let's say, a young toy inventor challenge, or the thing you bring to like a junior toy creators academy and you try to work through and develop. So that would be a great, exciting activity.
I love that. And to build on that, I imagine if people who are listening, especially if you're a parent, you look at the old toy box and say, we have, you know, half the set of Connect Four, and you have this stuffed animal that had the head chewed off from the dog, but how can we still combine those to create a new toy and not just throw this in the garbage?
That is very true. And I should say there is a term for this in the industry called kit bashing, usually referred to action figures, but this is a similar thing. So it's called like kit bashing, but yeah.
So, Ajel, we finish every episode by asking our guests to provide three tips that parents or educators can take away either in their classroom or just take away from a thinking perspective. So what are your three tips based on your experience and when it comes to cultivating creativity?
Teachers and parents do not realize the power that they have in like their communities of each other. So first step to cultivating creativity is knowing your market, and you guys are you are a huge part of the market aside from your kids. Like build a little bit of a community or like a pod of you that will get together and talk about what you don't like, what you wish you had, and the toys for your kids. That is something that I would love to do with you if you want to do it with me, but like you should be doing it on your own because you don't understand the power and the importance that your opinion has, right? The second activity, I would say get comfortable with like foam core and cardboard. That is something that I have so much of in my house. And anytime I get an idea and anytime my students have an idea, that's what we use primarily to create our breadboard mockups. Just building things that you're thinking could work or maybe could work out of those materials is the first step toward making something real. My very first patented item, I had the idea, we kind of sketched it out, and I was like, I can't sketch this clear enough. I took a piece of foam core, I took a piece of plastic, I took some paint, and that was the breadboard mock-up for what was in a few months a patented invention at a toy company. So like get comfortable with foam core and cardboard and let your kids invent with it and just free play with it. Okay, and a third thing. I feel like I already said this, but the toy challenges are so good. So in Toy Creators Academy, in my program, I recently added toy challenges into the program as a bonus because I had so much fun with them. And I'm telling you, the ideas that we got from these toy challenges, it's caused me to want to invite other companies to come hear my students' pitches because the ideas are so good. Just randomly combining like two seemingly opposing toy products or game products into something new, that you'll just be amazed at what you come up with. And some of those ideas are easily executable.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Ajel. We've really enjoyed this conversation about toys and parenting and teaching.
Thank you for having me. I hope it was great for everybody listening. I hope it was super helpful. I love my teachers and I love that I'm like kind of a mini teacher these days. So thanks for having me.
And thank you for joining us on the Fueling Creativity Podcast. My name is Dr. Cindy Burnett.
And my name is Dr. Matthew Werwood.
This show was produced by Creativity and Education and in partnership with TeachersInnovationStudio.com.
On the next episode of the Fueling Creativity Podcast, we'll be speaking with Assistant Superintendent Heather Lyon. But until then, please continue to keep fueling the conversation using the hashtag FuelingCreativity.